Chapter 1. Christmas, 1985. Anne surveyed the small baskets. 1, 2, 3, 4. She pointed to each one. "It sure makes me happy to give these folks a little Christmas cheer." She smiled as she spoke out. The four families came into her mind. Kayla, her mom and older brother, are family number one. All the baskets had food and clothing gift certificates. The same for number two family, Zane, his three brothers, and Dad. Number three family, Jasmine, her grandmother and aunt. And number four family, Robbie and his older sister who was raising him. Four students. These four were very special, talented, with beautiful voices, and their family situations were difficult. That was my idea for the baskets. I want to help my students. That night, the sky filled with clouds, hiding the moon. She secured the baskets to each of the four front doors. That would give them time to shop 2 days before Christmas. Her students lived down Christmas Lane in Oney Springs, Georgia. The town square separated the two parts of Christmas Street. Stately large homes decorated in Yuletide elegance with greenery and mostly white lights stood to the right for 5 blocks. To the left of the town square were all the Oney Springs schools, elementary on up. And to the left of the schools, mill houses on Christmas Lane rambled along for several blocks. The mill closed 15 years back, but renters who could not afford other housing lived there. Anne felt her eyes closing, her muscles aching, and her head pounding. She was tired after a busy day. She managed a small entry in her journal. "Lord, thank you for your blessings. I'm grateful for your constant guidance. You are my friend, and for a time here, my only friend. I am glad I could do one small thing anonymously for students. Help me to do good among folks in this extremely talented community." Before she started to drift off, she recalled the past November, a year and a month ago. The librarian wrote a sentence on Jenny's paper. "I'm Annie, calling 911 in a secure office. Come with me." Jenny turned the corner and Annie grabbed Jenny's arm. Jenny sat at the desk. Annie made the call. The last thing Jenny heard, 2684 Wayman, the library address. She fainted. While she rubbed Jenny's back, Annie spoke in a soft voice to her. "Miss? Miss." She came to, with the pound of her heart. Her head hurt. The police took her to the station in the heart of Chicago. Jenny told them what she saw and said their names, the shooter and the victim, that she met them both at a recent holiday concert she directed. After he moved her to another room, a detective introduced himself and asked her more questions. Jenny grew weary. He brought her coffee and a book of pictures. Within 2 minutes, Jenny identified the shooter and the victim. "The victim died," Detective Tolman shared with Jenny. Tears filled Jenny's eyes and slid down her cheeks. She felt a thick thud pounding in her stomach. The detective saw sadness reflected in her eyes. "Maria Christie's dad, why? Why?" she screamed to herself. The detective waited as her sobbing lessened. She calmed down. "I know you want to know what's going on, Jenny. In a few hours, we'll have more information. For now, you're under protective custody." Jenny answered questions for the deposition. She spoke in her calm manner. Enough time passed since the shooting for her to clear her thoughts. "Now, Jenny, we know you want to talk."
"He charmed me. Rico did. The evening of Maria Christina's concert. My singer, Maria Christina, introduced him to me. He was her uncle, brother to Maria Christina's dad. Rico and I plan to meet this afternoon. It's Sunday."
Oh no, I missed that."
She sat pert in her black turtleneck, plaid skirt, and black tights, blonde hair shining on her shoulders. She searched the men's expressionless faces.
"Oh my gosh, who is he?"
"Jenny, I am Leon Vanden, Drug Enforcement Agency. With your assistance in this deposition, we picked up Rico Narleanos and charged him with his brother's death. Rico Narleanos eluded DEA for 18 months. By some quirk, we missed his reentry into the U.S. Our informants misidentified him. That is why he basked in the short glory of being free to attend a family function, your concert. You caught his eye. For good or ill, Rico knows you. Jenny, do you know we put together a case which you alone cracked as an eyewitness to Jarqui Narleonis' murder? Under an alias, Rico runs a large drug cartel in the west and the south of Colombia. That conversation played in Anne's head hour after hour and day after day. I'm lucky and blessed. Lucky and blessed, she said that often to Jim Branson as he followed her progress. Anne finished her orientation. The Federal Witness Protection Program did its job. Anne Marie Farron looked forward to her future, a new college to attend for her student teaching. Fear stopped being the dominant emotion of her life about halfway through the semester of her student teaching. Anger of her circumstances also lessened. She told the truth, an eyewitness to a murder. The murderer, a drug lord, killed his brother. He was apprehended. Telling the truth placed Jenny and her whole family in grave danger. Acceptance of God's continual plan for her began to take hold. Now she felt stronger, in body, mind, and in her faith. Jenny Grant became the created person, Anne. FWP created her a driver's license, birth certificate, social security number, and passport. Anne no longer had long blonde hair. Now it was shorter, with her natural curl showing, and colored a more strawberry blonde. She did not recognize herself when she looked in the mirror. She also memorized an entire previous life. The program offered her a set of adoptive parents, FWP picked, that consented to help, were given her new life story, which they committed to memory. The couple was an Army colonel and his wife, based in Panama. Anne moved to Oney Springs, the county seat of Springs County, in hot, sticky June. This was beautiful North Georgia near the Appalachian Trail. Principal Hanford offered her the music position 15 minutes into her phone interview with him that March. He had her file in front of him, noted the glowing reports from her student teaching experience. There was a letter from the principal at the Minnesota school who wanted to offer her a teaching position. The job in Oney Springs involved high school mixed choir, female chorus that did a lot of a cappella, and all K-8 music.
I will expect both Christmas and Easter spring musical events, possibly a musical.
I work hard. I enjoy young people of all ages. And I'm especially intrigued about you saying people in town love to sing. This sure sounds like where I should be, Mr. Hanford. Anne learned what he was talking about. She picked a church, First Community Church, the Sunday after she settled in. That choir knew how to raise the roof. One singer played the guitar. Introducing herself to the minister after services, she expressed an interest in joining the lively choir. That summer, practices occurred right after service. The group lacked altos, so Anne's voice filled out that void. Three choir members possessed immense talent, a soprano, a tenor, and a baritone. The soprano turned out to be her neighbor, two duplexes down from where Anne lived. Annie Cal, that's what I want you to call me. She smiled at Anne after the two women realized they were neighbors, as well as choir members. Auntie Cal was 50-ish, single, with a son living in Philadelphia. She introduced Anne to other neighbors in their square of six duplexes. Annie Cal worked a Monday through Friday day shift as an RN at the county hospital in town. Auntie Cal looked around Anne's two-bedroom apartment. She noticed the fresh paint and new carpet. Recently, the landlord installed central air conditioning. Anne's possessions included a 10-year-old car parked in the driveway, a very basic wardrobe, her keyboard, a portable CD player, and a beat-up French horn. Girl, I'll lend you my blow-up mattress. You've been sleeping on the floor? Yes, I put money down on a washer and dryer, a love seat, and recliner. I'm picking up a dining room table and four chairs I bought at a garage sale down the street. Auntie Cal peeked into her bare bedroom. Goodness, you need stuff. I'm okay, and I'm proud to say
I'll own my furniture in several months. New bed coming soon. Let's get that air mattress. I'll blow it up for you, too. Annie Cal took Anne to her place, and they brought the air mattress back. Thanks, Anne expressed relief. The floor is pretty hard. Anne kept a journal of her progress as she moved to Georgia to be a teacher. She wrote in it with her version of a shorthand for herself, personal. It makes sense to me now, she said, as she looked back through the journal. I had to go through student teaching again, now as Anne, even though I had done a semester earlier as Jenny. I certainly did a better job the second time around in Minnesota. She chuckled. Then she thought of the chaos in her mind in the early days at FWP. Her mentors forced her memorization of an enormous amount of information entailed in becoming her new identity. Then they sent her into a Minnesota college. There, she was placed in a student teaching position, her last semester before graduation. The provost of the college she attended had himself been in the Federal Witness Protection Program. He was essential in the creation of coursework for her transcripts and her student teaching semester. He figured in a big way regarding her identity change. Jim Branson's last words to her were, "When one door closes, another one opens, Anne." She remembered his warm smile in that conversation. Jim wanted her to enjoy her teaching assignment, to spend at least 4 years in rural Georgia. He emphasized that time period to help her adjust to her new identity. Jim repeated again that she helped capture a very dangerous person. Because of that, her old life ended, and her worst heartbreak, the end of her life with her real parents and brothers. "Dad's a general. I must protect him, and Mom and Christopher and Seth." She spoke those words in her mind, a constant in her awareness of the life she led now. From the start of her school assignment, she knew one thing. "I have to lead. Lead strongly," she told herself each morning as she prepared for her day. She saw the talent in her students and their love of singing. That was satisfying to Anne. "Our principal wants a Christmas program." Smiles appeared on the faces of the kindergarten kids. That excitement transmitted up through 5th, 6th, and 7th graders. Same old," concluded the 8th graders. Anne made them in charge. They hunkered down, wrote out the Christmas program, the music, lyrics, and story. Anne stood by them the whole time. By the 20th of October, the 8th graders produced a video explaining their Christmas music program. Mr. Hanford approved their efforts, and practice began. "Class," she pointed out to them, to give her eye contact. "Everyone, look at me. Do you understand? It's your original effort, the script, music. What do you think?" Jasmine raised her hand. "We are very capable 8th graders, and we can do this." Groups divided up. The noise level rose. The choir room rocked as students gathered at the piano with blank musical scores. The piano keys sounded like tinkling bells, and lyrics popped out of mouths. Anne stopped them. "Again, you understand that you will lead all students K through 8 in this effort?" Heads nodded, and they got the plan. Zane and his group raised their hands. "Like in the music video, we have a story idea, but we want to add to it." "Go ahead," Anne urged. "My grandma Peggy lives in Oney Springs Manor, the assisted living place. She went there after my mom died 3 years ago. Mom took care of Grandma Peggy. My dad, my brothers, and I couldn't take care of her anymore. Grandma Peggy loves Christmas and Christ's birth a lot. Every year she asks about our school and church Christmas programs. She attended school where there was no music or programs at all. She always said she wanted to be in a Christmas play and sing." Zane smiled broadly. The groups looked at each other. Everyone started nodding their heads. They all looked at Anne. Anne nodded her head, too. "So Grandma Peggy will be in our program." Zane spoke up. "And she really can sing." Everyone cheered and clapped. Betsy announced that her group and Zane's plan to visit Grandma Peggy tomorrow after school. "It's time Grandma Peggy gets to sing," Betsy said emphatically. Applause from the groups thundered through the room. Whistles pierced the air. and motion time out with her hands. We don't want a principal wandering by wondering what's going on, do we?
The group quieted. Zane raised his hand.
Do you think maybe a smaller school group could go to Grandma's Manor, give our show there?
The students talked in their smaller groups. They decided they definitely could do that. Use two or three of the little kids in kindergarten to maybe grade four. The older students would carry the singing responsibility.
Assistant football coach Joe Emmett also directed the 9 through 12 band and string ensemble. He worked with sophomores as their English teacher. Powerful 225 pounds and 6'4", he looked every inch a former college football player. Anne saw him in action in the band room. His students adored him, and he cared for all of them. Joe liked Anne from the minute they met. He brought his tiny daughter to the band room one morning in August before classes started. He was dancing and singing to her when Anne walked in. Anne joined in his song and dance. The song was one from The Temptations. His strong tenor and her alto melded together. J.C. jiggled in her infant seat and smiled at her dad.
"We good, right, baby?"
he cooed to his daughter. Anne looked up at this gentle giant and held out her hand after the song ended. "I'm Anne."
"Joe." His huge hand swallowed up hers. "You've got a voice, Anne."
"So have you." Together, they planned the holiday concert they wanted to do. Working through the show early was important for Joe. Number one was lots of audience participation.
"I'll work with my band and string ensemble, but I want you to put this program together, okay, Anne? It looks like our football team is a bunch of winners. If by some chance we make it to the regionals, I'll be gone a bit. So far, it's been a great fall for my athletes and my students, and for me.
You like the variety?"
"Yeah, I do. How's it going for you?"
"Great kids, and I see lots of ages. It's extremely busy."
"You got a guy?"
Anne looked him in the eye and shook her head. He noticed her assurance as he made the gesture.
"If you want to, I have someone for you to meet. He's a great guy."
Matt saw Anne out of the corner of his eye as he scanned the football audience in the stands. His players spread out on half the field doing warm-ups.
"Definitely want to meet her. It's game day. My guys are ready. They'll fight hard. She's talented. She can sing and dance. Has that gift of bringing out singing ability in her students."
Joe talked about her for several weeks. Matt got to thinking. "I'm pretty shy under all the coaching bravado. My whole world is football and my players. I need to get a life, like Joe has. His lovely wife and little girl, some stability.
Geez, women have tried. I just ignore them. Maybe I'm ready."
He nodded as he spoke. Matt Garrett started his third year in Oney Springs High, the head football coach, hired after student teaching at a West Virginia high school. He was an outstanding tight end at Marshall University, a powerful player, extremely quick on his feet. He wanted to work with kids and loved social studies. He looked for a challenge and a chance to inspire. He met the challenge at Oney Springs. Football, the game, the drama around the sport was huge in Georgia, actually in the entire South. He mentioned that to folks not from the area. Growing up in a small Kansas town, Matt did not feel the emphasis on athletics that seemed to keep everyone in tow down here, maybe because he was a gifted athlete to start with. He had not felt that intense pressure that some of his players seemed to be under, from parents and some self-inflicted.
"Do your best," he smiled at his players his first year.
"Getting an education is number one. Making good grades is essential." The second item for Matt was to restore confidence in his players. He added some life skills for his kids. Together, they painted the football area and installed new lockers. Matt helped his players make a weight-building area larger and put out the word on equipment he could use. Anonymous stuff started showing up. By his third year, his team won games and gave back to the community. That fall, the football team and coaches put their strong backs to an outdoor tree planting project at the community hospital. Matt possessed that can-do attitude, totally expected his players to have goals ahead in their lives. He made them into players who could verbalize their individual goals to him. Matt got invited to lots of community events. "I'll go to this one," he told himself. The Harrells, a philanthropic couple, opened their homes and grounds in their backyard to a fall festival. Matt mingled, shook many hands, and wrote out his check. This year, the hospital needed to match a grant for a CT scanner. This fall festival kicked off that match. Matt observed the folks who lived in this North Georgia area. He sobered at the thought of his students' future health. Obesity and diabetes showed up over and over in both the young and old. He implemented a weight loss management program for the football team and any other students who wanted to improve their bodies and health. He understood heart disease, its huge presence everywhere he looked. A brand new kind of machine, the CT scanner, might be a help, a preventative effort for the community before hearts had serious trouble. If the machine results got folks to change eating habits and exercise, then it helped everyone. He heard Pachelbel's canon playing on the grand piano in the living room. Folks gathered everywhere to chat and eat. Stepping into the room, Matt saw Anne playing the piano. He watched her lovely silhouette against the large windows overlooking the side yard. Yes, there she was, her hair a shining reddish blonde, curled around her face. Sitting very upright, a slight smile on her face, she continued the song. As she finished, her smile widened. She seemed far away in her thinking. He approached the piano and clapped his hand softly. "Thank you." Anne turned her head, surprised that anyone was especially listening to her. Her piano playing provided a quiet, soothing background for this event. "Lovely. She is lovely." Matt smiled. "What do I like best, those eyes or that smile?" he thought to himself and could not decide. "Where were you, Anne? You seem so far away." "Talking to God, asking Him to make my life a melody." He smiled again, holding out his hand. "I'm Matt Garrett." "Anne Farron, I've seen you in action on the football field. I sure like the way you handle your players." "Aren't kids great?" "They sure are. I can take a break now. Want to walk with me to get food?" "Yeah." Anne's hair shone like a red golden halo as they mingled. Slim and 5'8", she coordinated with Matt's blonde 6'2 frame. They stood out, a white couple in a decidedly black gathering. Several folks spoke to them.
"Hi, coach. Introduce me to your lady."
"I can't believe I'm about to do this. A date? Oh my gosh." Anne spoke out. She remembered then, be careful in relationships, in what you reveal. It will be hard. Keep your life story straight. Do not call attention to your past. "I'm ready." She grabbed her backpack as she heard the doorbell. Putting her hand over her heart, she prayed. "Dear Lord, thank you for my life and the opportunity to bring a new friend into my life. I will have a good day." She opened the door. "Come in." She heard an excitement in her voice. Anne grabbed a light jacket. It might be misty still. Matt looked around the living room. It had a sparseness. He saw the music stand, her synthesizer, a beat-up case for musical instrument, and a couple of pieces of furniture. After a half hour on the Appalachian Trail, they stopped for water. The maple and oak leaves shone in glorious red and burnt orange hues. A rustle of wind moved the branches. The warmth of the sun enveloped them in the stillness. Matt put his arm around her shoulder as they rose to continue hiking. He touched her arm gently, then let go. She turned and looked up to him, smiling. They held hands.
"You're not a big talker." "Neither are you."
"Inside my head, I sing. I compose music and figure out lyrics, the words. Sometimes I sing melodies out loud, but mostly I tuck them into my memory."
"Yeah, I do the same thing with football plays. Something comes to me. Our football team uses a play called the Veer, but I'm all the time working plays. Gotta write the stuff down."
He smiled and looked up at the sky.
"And I have to be careful. These are just high school kids."
"They're amazingly talented music-wise."
"Athletically, too. So much ability. We gotta entice students to try.
Matt, each child is a gift from God.
Matt stopped, let go of her hand, and turned her to him. Yes, a gift from God. He smiled as he repeated her phrase.
He gathered her into his arms for a long hug. He kissed the top of her head and let her go. Stepping back, his eyes shone into hers.
I sure like you.
Anne smiled back, but said nothing. As they descended the trail, she hummed softly as she scrambled to keep up with Matt. Recognize it? He smiled.
Amazing Grace.
Yep.
Yeah, I've listened to music my whole life. Went through my Jimi Hendrix, then Seal, then Miles Davis phase.
What about now?
I listen to a lot of country, mostly for the message.
Me too.
Football season is on its downward slippery slope. We're going to regionals. After that, don't know. May I see you again?
Yes, I would like that. Christmas is coming. It's a high point of musical activities. My church choir, school song fest, caroling at the county hospital, and the senior manor. Maybe after that.
Okay.
He kissed her on her cheek as he left her on her front doorstep. Anne watched him, shoulders broad and his step confident, as he walked to his car. He turned and saw her wave.
Wow, she's still there. That's a good sign.
That felt really good, being with him.
The thought of someone watching her began to fade the longer she lived in Oney Springs. The elementary school holiday program progressed. The groups visited Grandma Peggy. She opened students' eyes when she announced she had a theme for the school program.
Christmas is a miracle in a modern world, she exclaimed to them.
Miss Farron, can you believe she said that?
Yes, Jasmine. Older folks say smart things. They've lived a long time and are wise.
The student group spoke as one.
Grandma Peggy suggested which Christmas song she wanted, and can she sing?
Astounded, the students were wide-eyed and excited. She sang us the words to a John Lennon song, So This Is Christmas. Anne looked at her eighth graders.
Do you have a theme for your program?
Christmas is a miracle, just like Grandma Peggy said, they spoke in unison.
That's very good.
And she reminded us that some folks do not celebrate our favorite holiday the way we do.
And so?
LaTanya spoke up.
So, we'll include songs we found in our holiday songbook, one from Kwanzaa and one from Hanukkah.
From the music room, Anne slowly transitioned her elementary students to the stage in the large auditorium. Mr. Hanford stopped by to watch their progress.
You're pretty amazing. Get in the students to sing while P.E. class is going on.
He smiled as he spoke to her and the third graders. One student piped up.
We don't mind the class noise. It helps us to sing a little louder.
The class laughed, catching Mr. Hanford a bit off guard. He gave them a big smile and waved as he left. Methodically, day by day and week by week, Anne encouraged the young voices. Progress occurred quickly. Once she knew that her students understood how much she cared, yes, they were reading, but they were also being heard. In some classes, quiet reigned. But in music class, well, there was an aliveness in their bodies, in their eyes. Somehow I'm able to draw it out of them, she spoke to Joe as they coordinated the high school musical effort. He smiled and crossed his big, beefy arms across his chest.
Well, that's easy. You're beautiful. You have the voice of an alto angel, and you care about kids.
Anne felt her face go fiery red and dropped her eyes to the floor.
But...
She raised her face back to him.
You don't take compliments well.
Anne started giggling. Joe joined in.
Back to work.
He put on his all-business teacher face.
My band, a lot of sing-along fun Christmas songs, and my string orchestra will do Pachelbel's Canon, an aria of melodies, one Indian, one Korean, and I want to have American ears hear Buddhist and an Islamic melody.
I'm going to have the risers on the floor to the sides of the audience. My high school voices are strong. I want everyone to hear how good they are. The girls' glee is a cappella. They know the NSYNC and Backstreet Boys songs. The theme for my singers has to do with writing letters. Folks contact those they care about, sometimes by letters during the holidays. Not all my students' families do this, but the girls really ran with the idea. Anne nodded as she looked at him.
Wow, it's communication. Joe smiled at her.
More than that, the song says the letter tells them we love them.
Great. That's way different from the past.
He smiled at Anne and nodded his head in affirmation.
What about your chorus?
Anne giggled. Wow, what a bunch they are. Two songs, one about a candle lighting up the night, the candle being the light of hope for our lives. The other is a rap song created by one of the guys in the group.
There's a place for audience participation in the singing and clapping.
It's a goofy piece about reindeer. Joe shook his head, rolling his eyes.
I can't wait to hear that.
For sure it will showcase the talent that is out there in our very own school,
Anne said, her eyes shining with confidence. We want our audience to keep Christmas with them, a voice out there, all through the year.